Hey everybody, welcome to the Poetry Blog.
Being a participant in the hip-hop world as well as a participant in the academic world in this particular mode.
Whatever is in your brain, a thing that you call rap, then certainly I'm not a rapper. Racial authenticity is a response to a performance. And no one listens to a rap album and is like, it's too self-referential.
They say the family that plays together stays together. Out on the city's playfield, Decatur, Illinois. From a distance, it looks like any other town of its size. Its people make their living from factories, stores, offices, railroads, and surrounding farms, just as in many other American communities.
The setting is crack, United States in the 80s and in the 90s. Find me under street lights, these nights behind me is a gang of angry.
Things that served me right away and that I could like recognize was this feeling of really not belonging anywhere, and the kind of paradox of you live in this area. Like for me, it was the Metro Detroit area, and you are committed to doing this work for your community, and then you have to leave to make it, but in the process are seen as kind of now a sellout. But then you don't fit into the new place because you're still from that other place and you're still kind of driven by that. And so you're kind of pushed into a permanent outsider status.
Right. Yeah, I think that there's definitely an element of being an outsider everywhere and then wondering, or maybe even blaming yourself for making choices that created this kind of exile status or this kind of this outside status, so that you can come back home and pick up where certain things left off, but then certain conversations you don't get to comment on because folks say, well, if you were here, then you would know. I think that that's why I wanted to make a project that spoke to where I'm from and where I'm at. From where I'm at, looking back at where I'm from, rather than trying to make an album about where I'm from all the way up until now. There really isn't much that I can do except for say the version of what's happening in Decatur now that's happening in Charlottesville is this, and here are my thoughts about it, rather than say, here's what y'all should do in Decatur.
Yeah,
because we know that the ways that we're going to tackle the problems in these particular places are really going to depend on what's happening in those particular places, no matter how similar they are. And I see pieces and parts of Decatur everywhere that I go, here, you know, in the United States and all of the other places that I've gone to, you know, speak and engage around music and what that music making practice looks and sounds like.
Where I'm at, I don't be knowing the difference between my foes and my friends. I don't pretend, and I'm cool with not fitting in a little bit. So I can't really even tell you if it's mine. No, I can only speak to what I find and lose along the way, and see, and I might move differently and decide if history don't repeat, then it rhymes. Yes, yes. Back when Jay was telling me niggas going, yeah,
and what I wanted to do with this album, I wanted to make an album that to me sounded like Decatur, but sounded like Decatur as well as Charlottesville, because like I'm working in Charlottesville and I'm thinking about Decatur. And I think there are a number of different ways that folks might go about that. Like it might be specific instruments. In this case, you know, like there are also like some just like samples. And so you hear, I think that you hear a lot of the influences of the people who I collaborated with as producers, who are from mostly, I mean, I guess like from Charlottesville in Chicago and in North Carolina. And I wanted there to be something really coherent about that sound. So not just like sample choice, but like also even the way that the album attempts to like cohere, or at least I'm trying to make everything like work together. And that was the thing that I talked to with the mastering engineer, is that we need to make sure that this doesn't sound like we took a whole bunch of stuff and like sort of like just like put it next to each other. It has to sound like these things, you know, like I want them to feel like they're like, it's a loaf that was baked, you know, like that it was like we mixed everything and, you know, like it came out, like it rose, you know, to be this thing that we have. And so, you know, like, so specifically you'll hear, like, I think that you'll hear some of the gospel stuff. You'll definitely get like, you'll get probably the impression that it was like Midwest producers, you know, like that give you the vibe of the kinds of producers that you know from this region.
A tamer version of my sickest sins. There is not a box that I will fit within. Live within the complicated complex storm. After the calm, it's further explanation of my thickest skin.
And then I think maybe the surprising thing is that that's not an uncommon thing in Charlottesville or in places like Charlottesville. But I think that the relationship that me, Truth, and Vintage have as people who are creating things is probably like some kind of relationship to church. If not like, if not present participation, it's like a kind of past participation in referencing, to reference our grandmothers or to reference our neighborhoods or to reference our families. And so, you know, that's a way that like, I mean, for me, like it is a way to like cite my grandma. It's a way to cite, you know, like to cite the church. Because while I'm not there on Sundays, and while like I'm not like I'm not rushing to go back, you know, there are lessons that come from there that like still like stick with me, that are like that remain in my head. And I think I even say that a couple times on the album, like making specific reference to, you know, like what Granny listened and said, and thinking of how that information is really important, and it's really important to not try to filter that through something else.
I was gifted as a child. Granny listened and said it. Told me to never bury my talents, give it and spread it. Learn from a Bible lessons much more than I give them credit. So really, my synesthesia is more like a synesthetic.
You say the so-called N-word instead of the N-word.
Yeah.
Can I ask why?
I mean, I think that it calls attention to the fact that we're using a euphemism. And so if we get to, you know, a point that we talk about the impact of words, lots of times people want to talk about what, like the relationship of that word to other words. Or people might say, you know, I mean, I wrote a song called Kill Whitey. And, you know, there are people who would say, well, if someone wrote a song called Kill the N-word, then my response to that is, kill what? And they're like, N-word. And I'm like, what N-word?
Yeah.
And now, like, what we realize is that the impact of those two statements are vastly different. The reason that they're vastly different is because one is represented by this euphemism, and the other is, like, just saying it. And if you believe that they carry the same weight, then you would say the thing that you were saying weighs the same as Kill Whitey.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons that you're opting not to say it is because of your understood, because of the understood weight of the word. But when we say N-word, we believe that it really does mean the word. And so then we think that the impact of saying the N-word is like actually the same thing. So when I say so-called N-word, then I think it brings into question why I'm saying so-called, and it tries to call attention to it as the euphemism it is, rather than it being the actual thing. And it never is. It never is. And we've attempted to make it, or no, I don't think that we've attempted to make it into it. I think it's just become the way that we do it in common parlance. When someone says, someone calls somebody nigger on you know, like, and it gets recorded. And then there's reporting about it. Then the reporting says someone called someone the N-word. Well, no, that's not what they called them.
Yeah.
I mean, like, if we're going to report what they were called, then we would say what they were called. We're not reporting that. So what we probably should do is say that someone called someone the N-word.
Yeah, the scare quotes.
Or someone called someone the word that we generally describe as the N-word.
Yeah.
Because when we don't explicitly say that we are censoring it, then what we do is I think that we kind of make a certain other kind of thing okay. Yeah. So, I mean, in my music, I don't say so-called N-word. I just say the word. But in my teaching is something different, and I want to model a practice that just brings attention to it so that I am kind of living my relationship to it and also kind of displaying my relationship to it. And my relationship in rhyme writing and delivering is different than my relationship in teaching and, you know, like more general conversation.
I'm also thinking that, like, because I'm thinking about in writing and rhyme writing, I like that way of putting it actually, like, that is already scare quote language, right? Mm-hmm. Like the sonic qualities of a series of lines together,
yeah,
it's going to put a different type of light on the different words that are used.
Mm-hmm.
And it forces you out of how I would use this word in a subject verb sentence or so I think.
Yeah.
Right. Like, and so in some ways, that's what the genre affords that maybe essay writing and teaching doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because what I'm hearing is, and I like this a lot, is that it's also refusing to give the word a kind of naturalized meaning in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people are like, oh, it's the word that's the problem. It's not the context, the reference point, the way it's embedded in the sentence, the who's saying it, it's just the word. You know what I mean? And by kind of signifying the scare quotes in teaching and in essay writing, you're saying it's not the word, you know, it's the context around and the history of the word in which it's like all these different ways that we give it the meaning it has. So substituting a different word or a different phrase just kind of recreates that same chain.
No one listens to a rap album and is like, it's too self-referential.
Yeah.
Or any album.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, you're talking about yourself too much, though. You're talking about what you think too much. Show us more stuff. And I've definitely gotten that feedback on an essay where it's like, it was an essay that was about a rap album that I wrote. And the person's like, yeah, it's too self-referential. And I'm like, yo, like, maybe this person has never listened to a rap album before. Yeah, like, I'm literally writing about an album that I wrote. And so the AB that I'm referring to in this essay is the I in the album.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't make the I in the essay not be the essay writer. So I call them AB.
Yeah.
And so it's like, yeah, this is like, yeah, we just can't do anything with it. I'm like, all right, cool. I guess I'm gonna hold on to this essay. Because I get it. Like, I get that what I'm trying to do doesn't fit into your form in a way that you feel comfortable enough with trying to bring this to your, you know, like, to your platform's audience. Fine.
Yeah.
Well versed in history and fiction, I'm sitting back thinking like, this what we've been missing. This should be the mission to cash in on the pain from laughter and shame.
I mean, you think about the metaphor being a vehicle, you know, or like at least containing, you know, like a vehicle, you know, and tenor, and like a rapper, you know, like him or herself, you know, like, or that rappers themselves having this ability, not ability, like sort of inherent vehicle-like properties. And very often folks are dealing with rapper as vehicle rather than like what's inside the vehicle, like what the contents are. And that's a thing that I do find myself talking quite a bit about, is how folks will talk about the shiny car, but then they don't talk about where it's going or what's inside it or who's inside it or, you know, like what's in the trunk or what's under the hood. They're just like, yeah, there was a car. And when someone says to me, like, yeah, it's so cool that you rap, or I just find it really interesting that you rap, I'm like, yeah, well, to me, that seems like the least interesting thing.
Yeah.
Because rap about what? Or rap how? Or rap where? And when?
Yeah, when people say it, do you respond with that?
I do now. I don't think that I used to. You know, like, I would just be like, oh, okay, cool. You know, I appreciate that, you know. Thanks.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, I think that it depends on where you are. And I think sometimes folks are again, like, they I believe that they're affording you a kind of generosity. And, like, where you're wanting to, like, try to take it, like, with a generous spirit, there's something really offensive and fucked up about it. That you're like, that's not really the compliment you think it is.
That's not really generous.
Like, you're really telling me that you paid no attention to what I was saying or why.
Yeah.
And I was saying it.
And, you know, people don't often do this to researchers. So a researcher will say, I'm a scholar, and very rarely does someone not ask, what do you study?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So I think there's also a way. Okay, so I'm going to put out a hypothesis, and I'm probably not the scientific use of it, right? But because this happens with poets too. People are like, oh, you're a poet, that's so cool. And then part of you wants to be like, ugh, no, I'm not. You know, like, that's, no, I'm not a poet. Take it back, yeah. You know? And then part of it is because suddenly people feel like they have this very simplified category that captures it. And it's an uphill battle to kind of like really articulate the different complexities within it. And you're also told in the moment they're like, oh, you're this, that they're not, and they don't ask, that they're not actually interested in like the complexity of who you are and what you're doing, right?
I think probably just about everywhere I go, I love to perform the song called Not a Rap Song. And you know, I say I'm not a rapper because rap is just talk and all talk is cheap. So these are just thoughts. Take them as they are, no more than just words, because taking them for any more than that would be absurd. And then, you know, like, I do a little call and response, and like I'm telling them, like, this ain't rap. And so, like, they're telling me that it's not rap. And, you know, like, in the, like, we're taking on the form of the rap song to do precisely this thing that you're talking about. It's like, yeah, I'm not a rapper. Or I'm not, whatever it is that you're talking about, like, I'm not doing that. I'm probably not, or I don't aim to. And that works in a couple different ways as well. You know, there was a point in time when I was like, you know, like, well, you know, if you, you know, like, if you're going to call, like, if whatever is in your brain a thing that you call rap, then certainly I'm not that. I'm not a rapper.
Yeah.
And
so I know what you mean by that. I'm 99% sure. But for like viewing and listening and be like, I don't get it. You just rapped. You know what I mean? Like, break it down more if you're open to it.
Yeah. I think that what I'm trying to say is that it's not what you think it is, or it's not as simple as you think it is. And it's not even really complex.
Yeah.
But without me demonstrating it, I think that it's one of these things at the show where it becomes a punchline that people are going to laugh at. Some of them because they truly understand it, and others because they don't want to be left out of the joke.
Yeah.
So when the song is over, then I'm like, all right, now I'm gonna do a rap song.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I move on to the next thing. It's important to claim rapper as opposed to something else that folks might try to like give to me. Because of the ways that rapper is weaponized, or the way that rappers are treated and talked about in this public discourse that removes a rapper from the, you know, like from the category of human.
Yeah.
And then when you see that word operate in a headline, it's like this person who was worthy of being killed was killed by whomever killed them.
Yeah.
And so this does not, like, I'm not disagreeing with what everything that I've previously said. What I am saying is that there's this contextual thing that goes on, like, in some places where folks might ask, And I remember being asked at a conference, like, oh, so are you a musicologist, like such blah, blah, blah? And I'm like, no, I'm a rapper.
Yeah.
And that's different. That's different. And if that person would have been like, oh, so you must be a rapper, I probably would have had a different response. And it really has a whole lot to do with what I believe the question is, like, rather than the words that are coming out of the person's mouth to form the question.
Well, and the way it's like super racialized, basically, right? Like the way academia has excluded Black folks from the academy by naming genres as like viable sources of knowledge production, as a, or alternatively as objects to be studied. Like Barbara Christian's work in the 80s, I think, is like one of the famous ones on it, right? Where she talks about how like the academia is increasingly focused on analyzing works of art as objects, which turns the artists themselves into a type of object that isn't really valued as having the right to, or not right, because rights are always exclusive, having the capacity and need to flourish, right? So it seems like with rapper, it becomes a way of handling that, if that makes sense. It's like there's moments when you assert it to kind of undermine that objecthood, right? And there's times when you toss it out to undermine that objecthood, but the goal is kind of the same. Like, this is part of like, I am a complex, everyone is complex. I just like the word complex because I hate simplicity, so it's easy. Like, I am someone who has like life that is flourishing in multiple ways. Rapping is something I also do as part of that. But because you've excluded rap from the academy in these spaces, inserting it is a way of kind of undermining the way you're excluding me and vice versa. Yeah.
Racial authenticity is a response to a performance.
Yeah.
But like, even understanding race is very, like, it's most often like understanding a response to a performance more than any of the other things that we think it is. And for that reason, when we ask people, what are you? I think that a lot of times what we're asking is, how do people respond to your performances of what they perceive race to be?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. And that is a question I think that people are not used to being asked or having to answer. And because they're not used to being asked it or having to answer it, it's really easy for someone to show up to a class like mine and then think, even though I've told them exactly not what we are going, like what we are not going to be doing, they're like, oh yeah, now I'm going to learn how to tap into like my Black voice. The ability to be able to put that on and to benefit from it is something that I think certain comedians will say, well, you can't limit what I'm able to do. That it's making like, this is the opposite of what America means. I have freedom of speech. I should be able to do the same thing that Black comedians do. Or I should be able to do the same thing that, you know, women comedians, you know, like, or whoever. And they have this, they really do have this idea that if a person innovates or if a person creates based on their circumstance, that that creation is something that they should be able to utilize as well.
Yeah.
So students doing it are just doing what they've been taught they have the ability to do. And so it maybe happens more at universities like where I am, or, you know, like universities across the country, than it does in other places, because people feel like they go to university to intellectualize you know, the access that they feel they have. There's some quality of Eminem's popular music, not like his, like the Infinite album. But the music that he did with Dr. Dre has some sonic qualities of whiteness that the previous music doesn't. And this is maybe one of the reasons that audiences responded to him in the ways that they did. It was because there was this sonic signifying that had not previously went on in any way that wasn't joking previously. And so there's a joke about what Eminem is doing, but there's also something like very earnest about the performance of, you know, like the, you know, Hi, My Name is Slim Shady song, where he's not a white guy who sounds like he's trying to sound Black in his raps. He's a white guy who sounds like he's kind of parodying whiteness in his raps, but he's rhyming. And he's doing all of these like really clever, like sort of bendy things with the language. But then you hear his speaking voice And there's a different sonic quality to his speaking voice than to his rapping voice. And there would be people who would say, Eminem, like his speaking voice, like he's trying to sound black, or he's like performing what sounds black. And in his rapping voice, he's performing what sounds white. And to me, that's really compelling. And also a thing I hadn't considered to be a quality of Eminem as a person in his performance of, you know, like of his, you know, like sort of rhyme performance and his, you know, his interview performance or a speaking voice performance. But now I look at it, I hear it, and I can't unhear it. There's no way for me to not notice that now when I hear, even hearing sort of like screaming rapping Eminem. Mm-hmm. There's something about that that kind of like is in the, it kind of feels like it's in like, it's sort of in the alt-right pocket, you know?
Mm-hmm. And like alt-right metal.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to, alt-right hardcore.
Yeah, to think about Eminem as sort of the, you know, like the alt-right rapper, to be like a rapper who is really like the content of his music and the way that it's delivered, particularly in his heyday, seems to be the precursor to a lot of the stuff that, you know, like that you hear. Yeah. I mean, even like sonically signified, you know, that would be an interesting paper to read. You know, I don't know how fun it would be to write, but you know, I'd definitely be interested in reading that. I think that there's a lot there to discuss.
Yeah.
And culturally, you know, Eminem came out against the alt-right, against Donald Trump. It was not surprising to me at all that so many of his fans were disappointed.
Yeah.
Because of course they would be. Like,
yeah,
you sounded like you were on our side the entire time.
Yeah.
Like some of us were inspired to be, you know, like to go down this road ideologically because of you. And yeah. Now you're betraying us?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also think geographically a bit too. Mm-hmm. Because he was kind of like the post white flight millennial in on getting to own black culture in the Detroit area. Like the fact that he's famous for 8 Mile is kind of mind blowing if you know the demographic of 8 Mile. You know, and so